We continue now with our second installment of the story of the Baal Shem Tov, which we've titled Saved from a Fate Worse Than Death. You will recall that in the previous installment we mentioned about the Jew Yankov Karpel, who was a very, very simple individual who met up once on his travels with a certain individual called Reb Hersh Leib, who decided graciously to teach him Aleph Beis and then Ivra, and furthermore Reb Hersh Leib settled in the village of Sharya, where he became a melamed, a teacher to grown men, and began teaching these poor illiterate individuals Aleph Beis and Ivra, so that these adults as well, some of them with long white beards, old men, began for the first time in their lives to taste the taste of Torah and to be able to daven like everybody else. And this so moved Reb Shmuel Akiva, who was the rabbi of the community, that when he saw this, he kissed the hand of the Hersh Leib and gave a parable about a king who had mute subjects who could not approach him because they were unable to speak, and a certain physician healed them, and when they were brought before the king and they were able to finally speak like everybody else, the king was most gratified to finally hear their request and rewarded the physician who healed them as well. And so Reb Shmuel Akiva said to Reb Hersh Leib and his students that you too were dumb for so many years, not knowing one letter from another, nor the meaning of a Jewish word. You were dumb mutes in the sense of not being able to pray, and you could only bring forth prayer from your heart. And Reb Hersh Leib healed you, and you now can serve Hashem like everybody else. And Reb Shmuel Akiva finished with a blessing that may Hashem bless you, referring both to Reb Hersh Leib and all his students, and grant you all of your heart's desire for the best. Despite the honor paid Reb Hersh Leib by the rabbi's visit, his prestige did not rise within the circle of Talmidei Chachomim, within the scholarly circle of the community. In fact, they resented his coming and effecting a change in the status quo that had been prevalent for as long as they could remember. In their opinion, a scholar, a Talmud Chacham, was required to study Torah, while a boor must remain a boor. Rabbi Elyo Shmuel, an honored scholar of the community, once encountered difficulty with a certain passage in his study. He presented the problem to the scholars in the Beis HaMedrash, and they argued it back and forth, but could not come up with a satisfactory solution. During a discussion of this problem, Reb Hersh Leib walked into their Beis HaMedrash. Hearing the difficulty, he explained all the contradictions and difficult passages in such a lucid and conclusive manner that the questions and the difficulty simply disappeared. This incident caused much jealousy and hatred among the scholars. They sought to belittle Reb Hersh Leib, but could find no faults within him, for his character was truly without blemish. So they began resorting to name-calling. He was given the epithet, the Yellow One, the Geller, for his blonde hair. But the more Reb Hersh Leib was derided by the scholars of the city, the higher his esteem grew in the eyes of his original pupil, Yankov Karpel. This one-time simple Jew was by now no mean scholar. He had already mastered the entire Chumash by heart, and had likewise memorized the entire Tehillim and Pirkei Avos, and was able to explain them as well. Yankov Karpel had also experienced financial success. He and his wife both attributed it to Reb Hershleib, for Reb Hershleib had told Yankov Karpel and all of his pupils that giving miser, giving a tenth of one's earnings to charity, was a guarantee for success. Yankov's new prosperity served to bind him even closer to his teacher and advisor, Reb Hershleib. Yankov Karpel had unfortunately remained childless all these years, but he cared for his widowed sister's family. He also contributed to the upkeep of his invalid brother's children. In fact, most of his income went for the support of these two households. He sent his nephews to yeshivas at his own expense. The city of Sharya witnessed the transformation of Yankov Karpel from an unlearned man to a scholar, all thanks to the Hershleib. Yankov Karpel's fame as a generous and charitable person also spread. In a nearby village, there lived a Jew who was an acquaintance of Yankov Karpel. Gershon Yitzchok was his name, and he earned his livings by renting the lakes of the local ports, the local landlord, and had fishing rights in these lakes. He also owned a tavern, which served as his living quarters as well. Gershon Yitzchok was an illiterate man, the father of many children. He could not afford to hire a melamed for his sons, since he supported his sons-in-law that they might continue studying. All might have been fine with Gershon making a decent living from his tavern were it not for the sudden change in circumstances. The old landlord turned his property over to his son to manage. The son himself was not a bad fellow, but he was easily influenced and easily swayed. He happened to come under the influence of the new priest of that area, who was a rabid anti-Semite. The priest preached to one and all that the Gentiles must not patronize the Jews with their trade, for the Jews were non-believers. In fact, he went so far as to forbid his parishioners to come into any contact with the Jews at all. Gershon Yitzchok felt the loss deeply in his tavern, which subsisted mainly on Gentile individuals coming in for a drink, and was forced to subsist in the main from his fishing. But that failed him too. It was as if the fish conspired with the priest and purposely evaded his nets. The dwindling income forced Gershon Yitzchok to delay in making his rental payments, and his debts grew from day to day. The young landlord, being a good-hearted fellow, did not object to the delay. One day, however, the old father decided to have a look at his accounts and check upon his son's management. He noticed that Gershon Yitzchok owed them a lot of money, and that made him furious. He sent for Gershon Yitzchok and gave him an ultimatum that he had 30 days in which to pay up all of his debt. If he did not pay up, warned the landlord, he would suffer cruelly. The month passed all too quickly for Gershon Yitzchak, who had no means with which to pay his enormous debt from his meager income. The old landlord remained firm in his threat, which he now spelled out. Should Gershon Yitzchak not pay him at the appointed time, he would imprison the man and his wife until the money was paid up. It was in the middle of the winter. It was freezing cold, and there were no passerbys whom he could even turn to for help. Gershon Yitzchak knew of no one who could even lend him the money. He even forgot his friend Yankov Karpel, who had visited him from time to time when his business had brought him to those parts. The priest somehow became involved in this matter, and he had his own opinion to offer. "What do you gain by imprisoning the couple?" the priest asked of the landlord. "That will surely not bring you your money. Take instead one of their children as a mashkin, as a pledge. I assure you that the Jew will not sleep nor rest until he has brought you the money he owes. And in case he fails it to bring it after all, why, then you reserve the right to convert the boy to Christianity. Tell him," continued the priest, "that he must hand over his 12-year-old son, David." This advice pleased the old landlord, and he took the boy David as security for his debt. He set a date beyond which he would have complete custody of the boy if the money were not forthcoming. A week before their time was up, the landlord called the frantic parents to him to gloat over his plans. "I'm warning you," he repeated to them, "that if the money is not forthcoming by next week, I will take you both for my servants, and your boy David will be mine forever. He will pay off the interest that has accumulated all this time, while you and your wife will work off the principal. And I further wish to inform you at this time that I have already given your son over to the priest to be prepared for conversion. He is too good to be a Jew." Upon hearing these cruel words, the broken-hearted couple burst into tears and begged the vicious landlord to have mercy upon them, and not to do that which was worse than death for them, that of having their son converted by the priest. But the landlord was not moved at all. When Gershon Yitzchak saw that there was no alternative, he swore to the wicked man, "I will uproot worlds. I will leave no stone unturned, but I will somehow scrape the money together to pay off my debt and its accumulated interest to the very last penny. But you shall not have my son." "My decision has been made already," scoffed the landlord. "You and your wife can yet redeem yourself from bondage, but your son shall be saved for Christianity." And with these final words, he grabbed his whip and lashed out at the man and woman crouched before them and beat them mercilessly until they bled from their wounds. But nothing could change their fierce determination to free their son and save him from the danger of shmad, of being converted forcefully, that, God forbid, awaited him. Gershon Yitzchak's first step was to go to the considerate young landlord. the young man, while hearing the pleas of the distraught father with great sympathy, was doubtful that he could sway his obstinate father once his father's mind had been made up. But he did promise to try. He came to them a few days later with word from their son. The young landlord said that the priest had worked hard upon the boy, but to no avail. The boy had refused to eat the trefa meat offered to him. David had a very scanty knowledge of Yiddishkeit, never having learned anything. But he was strong-willed and determined to hold his own and remain steadfast in his faith. The priest beat the poor boy until he fainted, but nothing helped. Seeing that all his efforts were to no avail, the priest finally decided to leave the boy be for the meanwhile until the boy regained his strength. "You can rest assured, at any rate," said the young landlord encouragingly, "that your boy will not give in so easily." This meager comfort served to spur the couple on in their efforts to procure the required sum to pay off the debt. Gershon Yitzchok decided that he must sell his tavern. When he finally found a Gentile buyer, the money he got was still insufficient to cover all of his debt. He began desperately to sell his furniture and other possessions at half their value. The new owner moved in before Gershon Yitzchok and his family had even left their living quarters, for they still had not scraped together the required sum. The new owner was not an experienced tavern keeper and mismanaged the business. At the end of the first month, he had lost money and was discouraged with the whole business. He demanded his purchase money back from Gershon, but Gershon Yitzchok refused to return it, arguing rightly that a sale was a sale. In fact, he claimed, the Gentile had gotten quite a bargain on this transaction and had nothing to complain about. If he didn't know how to run a business, that was not Gershon Yitzchok's fault. But again, the priest came into the picture. By advising the new owner to demand his money back by threatening to beat up Gershon Yitzchok. The priest knew that if Gershon Yitzchok had the major part of the payment in cash, it would not be too difficult to secure the remainder of the money, and he refused to relinquish his hold on the boy David. He yearned to convert the Jewish boy with all his might, come what may. "Why do you want to pay money for this tavern?" he said as his final argument to the Gentile owner. "The Jew will eventually be forced to leave it, and then it'll be all yours for the taking without having to pay a price." And so in the end, Gershon was forced to return the sale price and was left with no hope. Their last glimmer of hope gone, the couple had almost resigned themselves to their fate. But suddenly, Gershon Yitzchok remembered his friend Yankov Karpel, who had been accustomed to stay by him whenever he passed the tavern on his travels. Gershon knew that his friend was a man of means and a generous person to boot, who would surely be willing to help him out. But such a trip was not easy to make in the middle of the winter. As he set about making the necessary preparations for the arduous journey, Gershon Yitzchok suddenly heard a knock at the door. He opened the door to find two burly men carrying heavy clubs. They looked around the room and noticed a satchel and a heavy coat lying on the chair. Oh, so you're preparing to run away, are you? Well, it seems that we came just in time. The landlord sent us to watch that you don't try any such tricks. But I have to go to the city. It's my only hope of getting the money. You see, I have a friend there who will surely help me out. That's none of our business. Orders are orders, and we were told to make sure that you stay put. You know what? Suggested one of the men who knew Gershon Yitzchok and had patronized his tavern many times in the past. Go to the landlord and ask him if it's all right for you to go. Tell him that I'll go along with you to make sure you don't run away. Gershon Yitzchok had no choice but to go and ask the landlord for permission to leave his home. When he arrived at the manor, he was greeted with abusive shouts. Before he had a chance to open his mouth, the landlord was viciously at him with his whip. When he finally got permission to speak, he presented his request. Grudgingly, the landlord agreed to it, seeing that it was the only way that he might recover the money. Gershon set out for Sharya, accompanied by his guard. When they reached their destination, they were welcomed graciously by Yankov Karpel, who listened most sympathetically to the sad, sad tale that Gershon unfolded. At the end, Yankov Karpel assured Gershon Yitzchok that he would do all in his power to raise the money single-handedly. Yankov Karpel was forced to sell his own house and to borrow heavily besides, but he managed to present the entire sum to his guest. Money in hand, Gershon Yitzchok returned home with a lighter heart. Yankov Karpel had decided to accompany him to see that all turned out all right. They arrived at the tavern and were greeted by Gershon Yitzchok's tearful wife. She told them that she had found out that the priest had again beaten their son, David, for refusing to eat trefa meat, and had thrown him into the pigsty. The priest had announced his firm determination to convert the boy, even if he had to resort to more and more force. Gershon Yitzchok hurried to the landlord to repay his debt. He handed over all the money, which included payment for the accumulated interest on the debt. Then he demanded that his son be brought to him. "He is not on my property," answered the landlord indifferently. "He is in the hands of the priest, and it is no longer any concern of mine." Next week, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, we will conclude the tale of Saved from a Fate Worse Than Death.